Okay, movie retrospective time. I've been wanting to do this one forever. I love this fucking movie.
It's a good movie.
And so this has been on my list since the beginning. And actually, I think somebody requested it like a few months ago. And I was like, man, we need to fucking do this. And we saw that you could rent it on YouTube or Xbox or whatever.
Xbox.
So, you can rent it on YouTube too.
Yeah.
And so I was very, very excited. It's like, we got to finally do this one. This is Death Becomes Her.
Yeah.
This came out in 1992. I might have seen this in the theater because I feel like me and my friend were going to the Dollar Theater a bunch back in around 1992. And this looks like something that we would have gone to see. If I didn't, then I must have seen it like in 93, like on cable or whatever. And I probably saw it like a million times. So when we were watching it again last night, I was just like, I remembered almost the entire movie, like all the lines and everything like
we
that.
We saw them remastered, so this is available like in HD and, you know, Blu-ray.
Yeah,
quality.
Because this is one movie that
it's held up.
Very famously, when it came out on DVD, the DVD transfer was notoriously shitty. And it was just kind of like, it looked like they had taken what the rumor was going around at the time, that they had just taken the version from the Laserdisc and had just transferred it to DVD without like adjusting it to the format or anything. So it was supposedly, I haven't seen it, but it was supposed to look really, really crappy, like really muddy, like the colors and everything. Hmm. But it has since been redone. I think it came out on Blu-ray in 2016 or 2017 finally. The thing about this, it's a weird movie because it was directed by the very famous Robert Zemeckis.
Dude that did Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. He did everything.
Yeah.
This was actually the movie that he did between Back to the Future 3 and Forrest Gump.
Okay.
So this was kind of like fell in the middle. Now, the weird thing about this is that even though this got kind of like mixed critical reviews at the time, but was actually a pretty big commercial success. It actually came out, this is hilarious, but it actually came out the same weekend as the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, the one with Christy Swanson and Luke Perry and stuff that the later TV show was based on. And this, like, kicked its ass. This, like, made all kind of money.
It's a dark comedy. Okay?
Yeah.
But it's done in that Zemeckis tone. It feels like Back to the Future 1 and 2, kind of.
If that was like a horror movie.
Yeah. Which you end up with is something kind of like a Tim Burton movie, but not quite as Burton-y.
Yeah.
Tim Burton-y feelings sometimes can overpower you. This kind of has a Back to the Future kind of upbeat tone to it, even though it has a lot of dark fucking tones.
Even though it's pretty.
It's about murder and
demented.
The living dead and weird shit like that. It's about these people are all in their 50s. It's a group of basically three friends, two women and a guy. They all hit their 50s, and they're all losing their fucking mojo. And one of them's a movie star, and she's just not as hot as she was. The other one, you know, is fucking Krussel's wife. What was her name?
Goldie Hawn.
And she's fucking loses her man, who's a fucking Bruce Willis, to the old fucking movie star. Well, that happened when they were younger, though. When they got older, the shit all started to fall apart. And to make a long story short, Goldie Hawn secretly found out a way this cult, it was like a fucking ISIS cult or a fucking, I think it was ISIS or was it?
She's
it was
like, I guess the woman that she gets the potion
Bastet,
from is, yeah,
she's
I
like
guess she's like a sorceress.
Cult.
They don't really go into
it's
it.
It's an ancient Egyptian cult, though. There's all these Egyptian motif going on, and they have this elixir of life that can give you eternal life.
Yeah.
And it turns out that all the fucking famous people you thought you had died, they were actually still alive. They just faked their death.
Elvis,
they
joined James Dean,
Elvis, James Dean, Andy Warhol. They're all there.
Greta Garbo.
And they're all having these big parties and shit, you know what I mean, while you're not looking in this big mansion outside L.A. And anyway, it's just a badass flick. Fucking, there's a catch to this immortality, though. You can't die.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can, but then your body will start to decay. Just like if you're really dead, but you'll still be alive.
You'll still be alive. You'll just be the living dead.
Yeah.
So, well, a murder plot starts happening over fucking, you know, because bitches be bitches, you know what I mean? Fucking, the man left the wife for the other woman. They all, you know, and she tries to get him to kill her. You just got to see the movie. It's It's fucking hilarious.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to spoil this because, like hilarious. I said, it came out in 1992. I fucking love this movie. It's really funny because I feel like the late 80s and the early to mid 90s.
If you don't, if you're going to see this movie, go ahead and check out now because she's going to spoil the fuck out of this movie. And the movie, if you've never seen it, it's an epic film. It's about like a Back to the Future movie.
This movie is hysterical.
Yeah, it's
and
good.
It still makes me fucking laugh to this day.
Yeah.
I think this was the first time, it was either this movie or She-Devil with Roseanne Barr, which was the first time that I saw Meryl Streep doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at how fucking hilarious she is. She is so fucking good. Both her and Goldie Hawn like play off each other so well in this. They are just so bitchy.
Yeah, and it's
wonderful.
Yeah, and really this movie kind of stands outside of time. You know, if you're young, you can appreciate the movie, and it does, there's a lesson to learn from the movie. It's a morality tale.
Yeah.
But it really hits home when you're in your 50s.
Yeah.
As soon as you get close to 50, you're going,
And I laughed because I was reading something. Yeah. I think it was a piece in Vanity Fair or something like that. And they were talking about this movie. And they said that the person that wrote it said they saw this movie when they were like 10 years old and they loved it because it's kind of like, it's like a magical realism or like a supernatural horror comedy type of thing. But they said once you get it older, like it really like resonates on a whole new level because you can relate to the characters and like wanting to hold on to their youth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that I feel like the period from like maybe from like 88 or 89, like when Beetlejuice came out, maybe till like the mid 90s. I feel like that was kind of the heyday of these sort of supernatural horror comedies or magical realism type things.
Because
you had, like I said, you had Beetlejuice, you had The Frighteners, you had Practical Magic, you had Hocus Pocus, you had The Witches of Eastwick. You had like, and I love like all those fucking movies. So I feel like that was kind of like the heyday of that type of movie, which maybe Beetlejuice kicked that off. I feel like that was kind of the first big movie that was like that.
And they were kind of morality tales, all of them in a certain way. This one, I think, more so. This one is, when you get to the end, you it's definitely a morality tale.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Definitely. You go, there are different kinds of immortality. That's what the fucking moral of the story is.
Yeah, and it's also kind of a skewering of trying to stay young at any cost. And, you know, kind of like the whole Hollywood thing of eternal youth, particularly like, you know, as regards to like starlets and stuff like that, like once they get
superficial beauty,
once they get into their 40s and stuff like that, they kind of, you know, are get thrown away because they're not beautiful and young anymore and stuff like that. So it kind of has that kind of like vibe to it too. But yeah, so the interesting thing about this, so like I said, Meryl Streep is in this playing, she plays Madeline. And she is kind of like, I guess she was kind of like a famous movie star, like back in the day, because they do show like later on, there's like a clip of her in a movie with Michael Caine, which the scene with her, that's, you know, not real. Obviously, she wasn't in that movie. But the Michael Caine scene, I'm pretty sure that was from the Ipcress file. That was from 1965. So they just like put her into that movie. So, but she's kind of like, even when the movie starts, it's in 1978. And even by then, she's a little bit of a has-been because she's kind of like doing this horrible Broadway or off-Broadway musical based on Sweet Bird of Youth, which is a Tennessee Williams play, I think. And it's just like this really depressing thing about like a gigolo or something. So it's like the fact that they made a musical out of it is like a joke also, but you'd have to kind of know about, you know, about that play and about what it was about, like for that to be funny. But you can tell though that it's a really horrible, you know, musical because it's like she's just singing all about herself and how awesome she is. And like I said, she's kind of like a has been at this point. And then they try to like inject some disco into it, and all of a sudden there's all these gay bellhops, and it's like, it's just hysterical. So, you know, everyone's getting up and leaving. So apparently they don't go a huge amount into, you know, where Madeline and Goldie Hawn's character met. Like, Goldie Hawn's character is named Helen, and she's like a writer. So apparently they were friends when they were younger, because there is a kind of a conversation later on where, you know, Madeline kept stealing Helen's boyfriends just to be a bitch. And, you know, I guess Helen thought that Madeline was like low class or trash or something like that, because I guess Helen comes from like a more of an upper class family. So there's like this rivalry. They're essentially frenemies is what they are. You know, they pretend to be like friends, but then they're always like these throwing shade on each other. And it's only like, you know, pointed barbs and everything. And they're always trying to like undermine one another all the time. Yeah. And trying to like,
it sounds familiar, doesn't it, Jenny?
Yeah. And so it's like this horrible like competition between them all the time. Cause they all, it's like I said, and a lot of people do have like friendships like this where they kind of keep a person around, but then they're constantly like trying to like cut them down all the time. Yeah. And they're always trying to be better than them. Yeah. And that's kind of what you see with these two characters.
Yeah. A lot of women are like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, some of them are. So, you know what I mean? So that's kind of like the heart of the movie. Now, at the beginning of the film, which is in 1978, Goldie Hawn's character, Helen, has taken her fiancé, played by Bruce Willis, who is a very, like celebrity plastic surgeon, so he's kind of, like, a big deal, too. And she takes him to see Madeline's play, or her musical, and she's like, I wanted you to, like, pass this test. I have to introduce, like, all my boyfriends or something like that to her to make sure that she doesn't steal them, because that's what she does. She steals all Helen's boyfriends. And now what they did with this is it's really great because they made Goldie Hawn at the beginning, like, look really, really frumpy, which she is not, because she is a beautiful woman and, you know, was particularly beautiful at this time. And so it's very funny how they just made her look, like, not ugly, but just, like, kind of plain. Now, so Bruce Willis, who this was kind of like not that long after Die Hard came out. So he was like big action star. And I thought it was kind of cool that they got him to sort of play against type at the time. He plays this nebbishy, schlubby,
frumpy,
like
balding.
He's okay at the beginning, but then as it goes on, he turns to like this boozy, like alcoholic.
By the time he's 50, he's washed up.
Yeah. And
physically,
now he wasn't the original choice for this role. I heard it was actually supposed to be Kevin Kline, which might have worked too. Although I'm not sure, because Kevin Kline comes across as like funnier, like more like, I don't want to say he's more charming than Bruce Willis, but I feel like that comedic like charm and stuff like that might have made him seem less schlubby in this role. But Bruce Willis really fucking brings it. I mean, he goes all in with like the sad sack nerdiness with this, and it really, really works.
This is one of Willis's best movies.
It really is. Like, he's really, really good in this.
Right. And it's not a, there is action in it, but it's not Die Hard style action. It's just, you know, he fucking kills a couple of his wives and then fucking goes
this
on.
Is,
you just got to see the shit.
This is almost fun. Like, it's almost like it's a live action Looney Tunes cartoon. Yeah, not quite as zany as that. But I mean, because the whole thing, so there's the rivalry between like, so Madeline like steals Helen's fiance and marries him.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like, this goes ahead at a pretty good clip. Like it skips ahead 7 years. Now what ends up happening is that Helen, Goldie Hawn's character, she is so fucked up by Helen, by Madeline again stealing her man, that she has turned into this like big fat cat lady who
and
like
a hoarder
and a hoarder who lives in this horrible apartment, who eats like cake frosting like right out of the can. It's like she just opens the cabinet,
she's,
it's all cake frosting. Yeah, she's all day. This
cats
like,
are in the cupboard
and shit like that. And she is just obsessed. And she's like watching this scene from this movie where Madeline gets killed like as an actress, and she just watches it over and over again.
And so then later she's in a damn mental home.
Yeah, so they put her in a mental home, I guess because she hadn't paid her rent and she got arrested because they like she wouldn't vacate the premises or whatever. So she gets arrested and they put her in a mental home, and she's in there for like, I don't know how long. It's just 7 years or something.
It's driving all them crazy.
And it's driving all them, because that's all she wants to talk about is that woman and how she stole my man. And it's like she's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And then finally she has a breakthrough and she realizes she has to get past it or she won't be able to have a life. And then another 7 years go by. Madeline and Ernest, who is Bruce Willis's character, they've been married, they despise each other, they live in this fucking massive mansion and everything, but, you know, he's like, I guess he's become such an alcoholic that he can't do plastic surgery anymore.
He can't get it up either.
Yeah, so, which, she goes into that, but so he's now like an undertaker, like he uses his expertise now to like make bodies look like you know, all this other,
and she's fabulously fucking rich. You're talking about fucking, you know, huge mansion.
So they both so I'm not real clear on like whose money it is. It's I guess it's both of their money, because they were both like
they
I
both
said
had money.
She was a big movie star and he was like a really famous plastic surgeon, so I'm imagining that. So I don't think it was one person's money or the other person's money, but so they So fucking Madeline is like, you know, she's older at this stage and she's The cool thing about Meryl Streep in this role is another thing, too, is she was not afraid to, like, make herself look like complete hammered shit in this movie. There is a great fucking scene where her maid comes in to wake her up, and she's sitting, she's laying in her bed, like, up, she's got, like, the neck pillow, she's got, like, all the tape, like, on her face, and, like, shit, like, tied like that, like, to keep her face from sagging, and she's, like, and she's, like, snoring and shit. It's
she's
so
got
fucking
the maid
great.
Trained to tell her that she looks younger and younger every day.
Yeah, it's like all this other
she's kind of got this young boyfriend who's the caretaker.
Dakota.
Yeah, and fucking, she walks up on, in the fucking, you know, he lives on, you know, on premise.
In the guest house,
in the fucking worker man's house or whatever. And she looks in, and he's fucking nailing this young, hot young thing. And she tries to fucking blow it off. And then he runs out. He's like, well, you know, what do you expect? They say I look ridiculous with you and shit. So he starts fucking slamming on her. You know, it's fucking hilarious because, you know,
it's like
there's a big age difference.
The great thing about this, though, is that as horrible as her character is, and as horrible as Goldie Hawn's character is, I mean, these are horrible, horrible people. Yeah. They are shallow. They are vain. They're vindictive and petty and venal, and they're just these terrible people, but you still kind of feel sorry for them a little bit, which I think is what makes it work. So they've gotten invited. So that was like, you know, one straw that broke the camel's back, but also they get invited to Helen's, you know, book party. She has a book that's come out and it's like hugely, hugely successful. And so they go to the party and, you know, Madeline is still thinking that Helen still looks like a big fatso. And so she goes to the party, but she sees that now Goldie Hawn looks amazing. And she's
like in a red
she's
dress,
all
big
thin,
old slit.
This big dress. She looks like Veronica Lake and shit. Yeah. She's got like all the hair and she looks like really, really young. And so,
in her Jessica Rabbit dress.
Yeah. And so Madeline is like really, really upset. And she's like, what the fuck do I do? So she had tried to like go to this spa, you know, to get like,
transfusion,
you know,
with children and shit.
Yeah. They're like getting blood. There's like a great fucking scene. I saw one review that said it was like a Terry Gilliam movie, which it was kind of, where it's like a dude getting his like fucking blood replaced or some shit like that. So they goes and there's like, look, there's nothing we can do to help you in like one day. Cause she wanted all her blood replaced too. But they're like, look, we just replaced all your blood like 3 weeks ago. We can't do that shit.
Yeah.
But then this one guy that works there, gives her this card. It's like, here's this woman that may be able to help you. So at first, like, she doesn't want to do it because she's like, that just sounds like bullshit. But after all this shit happens with Dakota and seeing Goldie Hawn, like, looking, like, fantastic, she's like, she gets desperate. So she feels like maybe she should do something about it. So she ends up going to this, like, ridiculous mansion and meets Liesl, who is played by Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah,
looking
she looks great, man.
Fabulous. Damn. In this. Oh, my God.
She looks like an Egyptian goddess and shit. This
wow.
Fucking little
and
shirt.
Just, yeah, when I saw this fucking movie the first time, it's like that outfit that she wears the first time you see her with like that. It's not even a top. It's like a necklace, but it just kind of covers her boobs sort of. And it's like sarong, and she's got the knife like in there. Just like, she looks amazing.
And she's got a whole harem of these damn muscle building, bodybuilder Fabio fucking model dudes in heavy metal spandex pants and fucking tails for the top, you know what I mean? And they all got the fucking little security fucking security microphones in their fucking ears and shit, you know, at her beck and call. And they're like her sex slaves too. They're
because she says, so to keep your ass handy
and shit like that. You know, got these big fucking muscle men protecting her.
I love it.
Yeah, and she's in this fucking, just fucking gigantic fucking William Randolph Hearst style fucking stone mansion outside of LA.
Yeah.
Just fucking living in opulence. And she gives her a fucking line. She tells her that she can fucking make her eternally young and, you know, brings out this damn fucking box. The Egyptian fucking shard of crystal with blue.
Like a big Fabergé egg kind of shit.
Yeah,
in there.
Fabergé with fucking this blue glowing fucking ointment in the bottom of the damn. Fucking bottle is pointed, but no matter where it stands up, like magnetic,
like a gyroscope
and shit. And basically, you know, she didn't say how much she wanted. She just wrote down the price.
She said it's different for everybody.
But she showed her how much it cost.
Yeah.
On a piece of paper.
And Meryl Streep was like,
said,
"Oh,
nope,
wow.
nope." And then you know, she burned the paper, so you never did see how much it cost. But she gave her a little drop of it in a cut on her finger. And fucking when that hand got young, she was like, okay, how much?
Yeah, I'll check.
Okay, she's like, yeah. She gave it to her and she got young fucking instantly. She
yeah, her tits are like...
Her butt pops up. Fucking, yeah.
Her face gets all like gorgeous looking.
Yeah, so she goes home, fucking tries to work her magic and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, so the great thing about this movie, like you don't find out later on that Goldie Hawn had also taken the potion, but many years prior, which is why she looks so fantastic. But one thing that all that Liesl says, like before Madeline leaves, is take care of your body. It will be you and it will be together for a very long time.
Yeah.
She doesn't really specify that if you die in that body, like, or if you get hurt in that body,
you're still trapped in it.
You're still trapped in it. Like, you will live forever, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the body is going to, like, if you fuck it up, it's going to stay fucked up.
Yeah, and if you die, you're still in it. And I guess it starts to slowly decay anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to heal if you're dead. I guess if you're alive, it will heal.
Yeah.
But if you're dead, it
won't because heal. The shit did that. Yeah. So I think, but the fact that they died, because like all the people that were at the party, like at the end, were people that had taken the stuff. So they were immortal and they still all looked young and everything. The only reason they started, deteriorating was because they both died.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens is that it turns out that she has not, I mean, it hasn't even been like an hour or two before she took the shit. So she goes back to the house. She puts on like her fucking, she looks all fabulous. She puts on like her black cat suit and like her little pig thing. She's going to go out and like go out on the town and get some dick. Yeah. And basically her and Bruce Willis get in like this big fight. And she just keeps like fucking needling him and needling him. She's boozy, flaccid.
She's going to get something hard and shit. They get into a fight. He fucking throws her ass down the stairs and it kills her.
Well, he starts like choking her and it's like she starts stumbling down the stairs and then he's like, oh shit, what am I doing? And then she's like, help me. And then she's like, help me, you idiot, or something like that. And then he goes, dick, and she falls all the way down and she's like all fucked up and her legs are all backwards and shit. So obviously he thinks she's dead. Now him and Helen have actually been conspiring to kill her anyway and make it look like an accident, which honestly, I think that's probably of all the fucking, shit that's in this movie. This might be one of my favorite sequences is when Goldie Hawn is telling him, she's like, look, I've thought this all through and this is the only way we can do it. And she's like telling him the plan and they're kind of like showing it. They were going to drug her and then put her in a car and then,
run the car
off a cliff. Yeah. And there's like, just, there's so much funny shit in this where there's like, we'll just say that they're, that she's had a little too much to drink and they should, there's like 40 fucking vodka bottles like in the car and shit like that. And then at the end, like after they find the body, like there's two coroners and it's like the body's all fucking burned, like with a vodka bottle. And he's like, well, she had it coming. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of shit. Yeah. It's just a great fucking scene. But then obviously, even though she is all like Madeline's all fucked up at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, she gets up though anyway.
She gets up and she's not real happy about
it. She puts her head on back, straightens her head around. Now, eventually what happens is that she blasts the other girl in the fucking belly with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And then she comes back to life because she didn't know that she'd taken the potion. Yeah. She's like, you too. So now you got two living dead girls fucking chasing fucking dude around. Fucking Bruce Willis is dealing with these two living dead chicks.
Who hate each other. And who fight with shovels and are trying to like kill each other.
And they need him to fucking keep them looking decent because one of them's got a big old hole where she got blown in half with a shotgun and the other one's got her fucking head is fucking busted up. So he's putting Bondo on him and shit like that and makeup.
Yeah, because there was a scene earlier, like before anybody dies, where he's at this bar and like this woman comes up to him and is like, oh, you're Dr. Melville. It's like, I never got to tell you how awesome you did a job of my great aunt or whoever it was, like at the funeral. She looked like you even brought out the cheekbones. It was a shame to bury her and all this other kind of stuff. And she asks him like what his secret is. And it's funny to me because she asked, even though she clearly didn't want to know, because when he starts telling her, she's just like, okay, I'm out of here. Cause he's like, you know what my secret is? He's like, spray paint.
Damn.
He's like, you can't use makeup on dead people because the skin is too dry. So you have to like go get this fucking. So he goes this long spray thing about paint. Spray paint. It's got its own adhesive and you have to leave it. And the woman gets all upset. So the fact that he knows how to do that, like how to make dead bodies look good. So the two women who are now dead and are kind of like falling apart and decaying, they want to keep him around to keep them looking good like forever. So they try to get him to drink the potion as well, but he doesn't want to do that for various reasons.
There's a bunch of cool shit in the movie too, little stuff that if you weren't paying attention, you may not notice it. Like there's one part where Bruce Willis falls from the top of the damn building. Fucking his two girlfriends were trying to save him, but they couldn't. His two dead girlfriends are trying to save him. They couldn't get him in time, and he fell through a damn stained glass roof into the swimming pool. And he survived the fall. And when he came out, there's a dude taking his clothes off, and there's a girl taking his clothes off, getting ready to go to the swimming pool. And he goes, you going to be done here in a minute? Or should we come back? And he says, no, I'm done here. And fucking, and he runs out. The dude goes, that was pretty neat. If you paid attention to who it was, you know, it was fucking Jim Morrison.
That was Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison said, that was pretty neat. That was pretty neat. Dude fell through the roof. Just all kinds of funny
there's
shit.
Just, oh my God, yeah. There's just so much funny shit. And like I said, the line delivery in this, particularly Meryl Streep's delivery line, she is just, the shit she says is just so funny. Like the fucking arguments they get into, like, you know, her and Bruce Willis, that whole argument they have on the stairs before he starts strangling her, the shit with like her and Goldie Hawn, like they're fucking, you know, constant sniping at each other and shit like that. Yeah. It's like when before Madeline takes the potion and she goes to like the book party and sees like Goldie Hawn, like looking fabulous. She goes up and, you know, Goldie Hawn's like, they pretend like they live, oh, how are you? And they call each other Mad in Hell, which I think is very funny.
That's right.
And because that's the short forms of their names. And she says something like, you know, I wasn't going to invite you and stuff. I didn't know if you'd want to come because, you know, she was trying to make it seem like, oh, I didn't think you'd care about my book or whatever. Right. She's like, I didn't think you'd want to come. But then I talked to my PR person and my PR person said, Madeline will go to the opening of an envelope. And then it's like, it's just so, so bitchy. Yeah. It's like, she's like, so I fired her. Well, I almost fired her. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like just this really bitchy. And I think this whole kind of over the top, bitchy, campy kind of aesthetic to it. This is why, and I actually didn't really know much about this, but this has kind of become a cult classic, even though, you know, it was a commercial success at the time, but then it kind of got forgotten about, particularly like in the gay community. And honestly, like I heard that RuPaul's Drag Race, which I think it was season 7, which I haven't seen, but I think they did like a Death Becomes Her like inspired like runway or show or something like that. So apparently this is a really big thing with like drag performers. Like
it's, I can see why.
You know, for them to like dress up as these characters, just because their bitchiness is just delicious. And just the way, and also the cool thing about this movie too, and I think, like I said, this was something that, you know, came, was like in the Frighteners and other types of movies of this, you know, time period, where it's almost kind of like, it's set in the real world, but not exactly, because there's like little things in it that aren't really explained, but are kind of like, give it this weird, like magical sort of,
kind of like a Burton flick
tone. Yeah. It's like, there's stuff like when Madeline goes to the spa and like that dude like appears like just behind the, you know, behind them on the couch, like, and he didn't come in. It's like when Bruce Willis's character goes down to the morgue to get Madeline out, and these three nuns go by and they're like floating, like they're ghosts and stuff. Yeah, ghosts. And like, they don't explain anything like that. It's just these little touches that like kind of make it seem like it's not exactly happening in the real world, except it kind of is. Yeah. So like I said, it's like a magical realism type thing.
There was this one part of the scene where fucking Bruce Willis's character is trying to get the fuck out of that damn party. I think it was after he fell through the roof.
Yeah.
He tried to get out of there. And it just shows the front door to the mansion and people arriving. And there's a silver sports car there. It wasn't a Porsche Spider, but it was like a custom silver little sports car. And he jumps in it to take off, and a dude goes, hey, wait a minute. And it was James Dean,
yeah.
So if you know the relationship between James Dean and silver spiders, you know, that's what he got killed in. But
because what the one thing that Liesl, you know, the sorceress or whatever, one thing that she says to Madeline, like after she drinks the potion, is that, you know, go out and be fantastic and famous and everything like that for 10 years. But after that, you have to disappear.
You
can like fake your death, or you can just like,
yeah,
you can become a recluse or something like that. So they're implying that all of these like famous people that, you know, are supposedly dead are actually still alive.
Yeah.
They just had to fake their death after a certain time period.
She's addressing the whole crowd of them down, you know, because the big party, and she's like, you know, it's good that none of you guys, you know, are everybody's laying low except for one person who makes appearances that now and then. I'm not going to name any names. And it pans to Elvis. He's got these two women with him, and he goes, I was just having fun, man.
Right. It's like,
I was just having fun.
So it's just like, there's just so many great, and like I said, it's just every time this movie, because like I said, I saw this movie like a million times when I was growing up because I just fucking love this movie. There's just something, the look of it is so cool. It's like, I just love like all the little magical touches. Yeah. The comedy is funny. Like a lot of it, it's weird because a lot of it is like really, like I said, like campy and like over the top and like super bitchy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's also like there's a lot of really subtle jokes too. Like, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a scene in a doctor's office where there's like a brain in a jar that says Abby Normal on it. Yeah. It's like when Goldie Hawn and, you know, Meryl Streep are fighting about the potion. Goldie Hawn says the date that she took it, which was October, whatever, 1985, which was the same day as Marty went back to the future in okay, Back to yeah. the Future.
All right,
so yeah. he's like making all these references, like it's like it's one. In universe and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's all that kind of stuff going on. And it's just these great little lines. Like I love when fucking, so when Madeline, you know, she fell down the stairs, she broke her neck. She's all like fucked up and everything. But Bruce Willis thinks it's a miracle that she's still alive. So takes her to the hospital. And so the doctor's like examining her and he's like, can't get it. She's like, you know, she's like 80 degrees. It's like, she doesn't have a heartbeat. And it's like her neck is broken, the bone's sticking out and shit. And so he's like flipping out. So I guess she passes out and they take her to the morgue, like after Bruce Willis is gone, like, cause he's gone to find help or whatever. And then, you know, so he comes back in the room and she's gone and he's like, where's my wife? Oh my God. And it's like, they're like, well, they took her to the morgue. She's dead. And he's like, the morgue, she'll be furious.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of shit.
He gets her out of a plastic bag though. She comes back out.
The weird thing about this movie, because I hadn't seen the trailer like in a really long time, but when we rented it on Xbox, they showed like the trailer from the time. Now there are a bunch of scenes in the trailer that were not in the movie. Like there was a scene where Bruce Willis was like taking her out of the refrigerator and then was like dragging her up the steps and she's like, oh, why am I sweating or something? He's like, I think you're defrosting or something like that. Mm. Now that was not in the movie. I think that was cut out. There was also a whole alternate ending to this. I think there was a whole thing where Bruce Willis, like after he took off, because he didn't want to like hang around and be like these two bitches, like makeup artists, like forever. So he like took off and he meets Tracy Ullman. Her part was completely cut out of this movie.
I remember her, yeah.
She was the one that got The Simpsons their start because it was her TV show that The Simpsons started on. So she was in this movie. She played like a bartender or something like that. And he meets her and then he becomes a bartender and she helps him like fake his death and all this other stuff. So there was that whole thing that was excised. I think there was also, I think what ended up happening was that they shot that ending and Robert Zemeckis was like, that ending is too happy. I don't really like it because the ending of this is great. I love the ending of this movie, like with the funeral, like because Bruce Willis lives like another 37 years or something like that.
Yeah, he got married. He had his first real marriage and his life began after 50.
After 50. It's like nobody knows much of anything about him before he turned 50.
Yeah,
and it's
like
he had all these kids and grandkids and he started and all these foundations.
Yeah, and then all these adopted children from across the world and people. And he became so. And then the preacher was like, you know, it was true immortality.
Yeah. So it'll live like, through his children and grandchildren and all the foundations and all the people that he helped and everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, meanwhile, like the two, like Matt and Hell, who are like, they've kind of gone to shit because they don't have anybody around to take care of them. Because after he took off,
they can't walk hard.
They were like, well, shit, now what do we do? And she's like, well, it's just maintenance. It's like, we have to like help each other out. It's like, I'll paint your ass, you paint mine.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, forever painting each other's asses and all this other kind of stuff with the spray paint. So 37 years later, they're at his funeral and they have the veils on and they're just like thinking it's all bullshit. They're like, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They're just like cackling back there, like horrible bitches. And then they leave and they're like sniping and they take their fucking veils off and they look like complete crap.
All the paints crack.
Because they don't really know how to do it. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're all runny.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff. And they're sniping about, where's that can of spray paint? You lost it, blah, blah, blah. And you did all this other stuff. And then, like, at the end, they fall on the can of spray paint, which has fallen out of the purse. And they fall
to
the
bottom.
And they just shatter.
Yeah.
And
they're
so
talking to each other. It's like, where'd you park the car?
Yeah, it's like that's no big thing.
Yeah.
He's like, even though all I can imagine is like everybody coming out of Bruce Willis's funeral and being like finding all these pieces and like talking heads and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's just fucking hilarious. But yeah, so
great movie.
It really is.
I would put it up there with the Back to the Future trilogy. I'd put it up there with Beetlejuice. I'd put it up there with what else?
Yeah, but it's similar. It seemed like, or similar to The Frighteners. It kind of gives me that kind of tone a little bit.
Kinda, yeah.
Because it's like funny, yeah. But it's got, it's kind of like a morbid humor, which I really like.
Yeah.
I feel like I said, even though it was commercially successful, I feel like dark comedies are kind of like a hard sell. You know what I mean? A lot of people seem to not like them or anything, but
a movie like this could be revived on streaming, though.
It could. I heard that they were doing a remake of this, or maybe a musical based on this. I'm not real sure.
Well, no, I'm just saying the original. Just remaster the original. People talk about it and show it, because it's still applicable today.
I saw this. I had never seen this channel before, but I was looking for other reviews of this, and a lot of people have reviewed this, because apparently this is like a really, really popular movie. I found this one channel called Movie Bitches that was like, they looked pretty young. I don't know how young they were. It was a woman, and then it was like a really, 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 really over-the-top gay guy who was like adorable and hysterical. And they were drinking wine like through the whole thing, and they had the running tally of how many wines they were having, like between them, and it ended up being like 30 or so. It was like something crazy, because it was like a 45-minute. But and they fucking loved this movie, and they were just like, they knew the whole thing like backwards and forwards, and they're just like quoting it and just like cackling, and it was fucking hilarious. So go watch that, because I think they only have like, you know, maybe 1,000 or 1,500 subscribers.
Yeah,
but I just thought it was really, really funny.
What I like about it is that it does kind of the story seems to tilt a little female, but not really. You know what I mean? As a guy, I liked it too.
Yeah,
there's
because
a bunch of cool shit in it that happened.
Well, you could kind of see it from the dude's point of view too, because it was, I mean, his arc.
Yeah, then all of a sudden you're trapped with these fucking living dead chicks, and they're fucking, you know,
I mean, his arc was finding his balls, because the whole thing is that his whole life he had been manipulated because you could argue that in the beginning, like, Goldie Hawn's character Helen did actually love him, and she was actually upset that he had been like that he had left her.
She was a psycho though.
But she kind of became a psycho through circumstance. Whereas I think Meryl Streep's character was just kind of like a bitch on wheels, like from the beginning, because I mean, she was like just stealing men from Goldie Hawn just because she could, just because she wanted to be an asshole.
Ego.
Yeah. Because she was in competition with her because she was jealous or whatever. So I feel like, you know, Goldie Hawn was a little more sympathetic, but she like went completely crazy too. Obviously they were both like fucking crazy making
plot
of each other.
Murders and
but
shit.
The thing about Bruce Willis's character was that, you know, once the stuff in the story started happening, he was not, you know, neither one of them gave a shit about him. They just wanted, you know, Goldie Hawn just wanted him to kill Madeline, and Madeline just wanted him to stay around to keep her looking good, like, and fixing her, like, when she was dead. So it's like they both just were using him, like, as a toy, pretty much. So, you know, him finally, like, dropping his nuts and saying, I'm going to be my own person. You know, so he kind of had a character arc as well, like trying just getting away from these
Bruce's
vipers.
Bruce's best movie is Die Hard 1. It just
well,
is.
Yeah.
Okay, but I would say this is his best work in terms of acting. I think he did a fucking great job in this.
Because he has a lot of range.
He has a lot of shit to do in this.
And he's a very good, I mean, I think people forget, because now he's kind of like better known as an action star, but he started out as a comic actor, like he started out on Moonlighting. So this is kind of like more along those lines. But like I said, he's very good at playing kind of this schlubby alcoholic loser who's just been like, all the life has been sucked out of him by this woman. It's just like really good seeing him playing against type like that. Particularly like what people are more familiar with nowadays. So he's like really, really good in this. And like a lot of his comic delivery is very funny. Like the three of them, I kind of wish they had done more movies together, just because they're so, so funny. Like the three of them are just so funny together.
Yeah.
I will say too, I just wanted to mention that this movie, the special effects for 1992, this still looks pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Pretty early, like, digital effects. This was done by Industrial Light and Magic. They got actually an Oscar for this. And the scene where her head, like, gets kind of, like, squished down, like where Goldie Hawn hits Meryl Streep with the shovel and then she has to pull her head back up, where you can see, like, the neck and everything like that, that's the first time that they had ever done, like, CG to do skin tones. Texture. And they actually used that the following year in Jurassic Park.
Okay.
So this was like the first time that they had used that effect, and they used it much later.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. Park. It was good enough.
Yeah, it's like, you can still see it's not perfect because it was 1992, yeah. but for 1992, I mean, it still looks pretty
and
fucking
it matches the tone of the movie, too.
Yeah,
the movie has a slightly fantasy kind of
a fantasy, like cartoonish yeah. kind of tone to it.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter that it doesn't look exactly like realistic because it just matches. Because like I said, it's clearly not the real world. I mean, everything, you know, the first part that's set in New York and the second part is set in Hollywood, but it's clear like a fantastical, you know, setting.
Yeah.
It's a fantastical LA. It's a fantastical New York. It doesn't look like the real thing exactly.
Very good movie about life.
It is, yeah, with kind of a lot to say, like I said, about immortality and if you really want that or anything. And also, like I said, about aging and vanity and stuff like that.
Aging, vanity, relationships.
Yeah.
It's wealth.
Yeah. And just seriously, watch this fucking movie. It's just like, honestly, everything that's awesome about this movie, but still, like, just the bitching between Goldie Hawn and Meryl Streep is just fucking priceless in this. Yeah. And I could just watch it all day long because it's funny as shit. But yeah. So seriously, you rent it on YouTube. I think it's like $2.99 or $3.99. Rent it on Xbox. I'm sure it's streaming other places too. But it's a fucking great movie. And I feel like a lot of people don't talk about it.
Kind of forgotten.
Yeah. So definitely fucking see it.